You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised.
Ladies and gentlemen, indeed, the sports revolution will not be televised. Instead, it shall be podcasted. Welcome to the sports revolution on the Butt Munch Chips Radio Network. Butt Munch Chips, sit on your butt and munch. I am Will Rabb, joined, as always, by the Landon Doan.
Sorry, is that me? I think I'm just a Landon Doan. I don't know if I'm the Landon Doan.
Well, you're the only one I know, so...
We'll work that out
during the commercial break.
We'll argue schematics later.
This is indeed the sports revolution. However, it is our debut episode.
Yeah, give it up for us. And who'd have thunk it? The revolution is being podcasted.
Well, you know, a lot of stuff is being podcasted these days. The internet's taking over, and I think it's a great way to bring the revolution to the world of sports talk radio.
And to quote a wise man, the times they are a-changing. Aren't they, Rab?
Indeed they are. We got a great show for you today. We want to start with some news and notes here, and we'll get to that in a second, but just touch on, for those of you who may not ever seen or any of our episodes of Near Fall Radio.
Which would be most of you, probably.
A, you should go check that out.
Please do. Please.
But B, maybe if you haven't seen the debut episodes, you don't really know about us. So, I guess I'll start with you, and let's just kind of explain who we are and why we're doing this podcast, I guess. That'd be a good place to start with a brand new podcast. Why should you listen to us talk about sports, right?
Because we'll give you prizes. Wait, no, we will not give you prizes. My name is Landon Doan. I am the owner, COO, CEO, and proprietor of ButtMunchChips.com. This is my brainchild. I like to talk into microphones, and people seem to like listening to me talk into microphones, and I like to talk about stuff that I like. So we have a wrestling podcast. I like wrestling. We're going to have a sports podcast because I like sports. And as a red-blooded male, who don't?
Exactly. So we both like sports, and the radio network needed another show.
Yes, it
did. To make it more
yes,
of a...
To make it an actual radio network as opposed to whatever the hell it was we were doing prior to this.
Effing around, I think, might be a good term.
Oh, yeah, since we're early in the podcast, can I say fuck?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Cool.
This is a podcast, yeah. It's not a radio show.
And it's no longer safe for work.
I'm Will Rabb. I am the Will Rabb on Twitter. I am a cavalcade of creative names involving my last name on Near Fall Radio.
Cavalcade, that's a fanciful word. I'm a journalologist, and I'm impressed with that word.
In my spare time, when I'm not watching sports or wrestling, I read the dictionary because I'm a sad, sad little man. I am a producer of various radio programs for the Cumulus Knoxville family. But
I work there, too, as well. Sorry.
Indeed. Primarily, though, I am a sports producer. Not only for Cumulus and Knoxville, but also for the Vol Network and their coverage of University of Tennessee football. And I, like Landon, really, really enjoy sports.
Yes,
and talking into microphones. And also, like a Landon Doan, because I've decided you are indeed, were right, you are a Landon Doan.
Well, that is how
I have opinions that people need to hear. So that's why we're doing this podcast.
Wait, you have opinions?
Well, most of us do.
You know, I've heard that somewhere. That everybody has opinions, much like that who have assholes. See, I'm going to make this very not safe for work.
And that's fine, because it's a podcast, and I don't want to edit it. So, whatever. We're having a good time. We're talking. Look, here's what we want to do. We want to bring you our take on sports, but we want it to feel like a conversation. I know a lot of people say this, but it really is true. What would you rather listen to? Some guy reel off a bunch of stats and tell you all this stuff? Or would you like to listen to a sports talk show that gives you an educated opinion, but it feels like you're sitting down at the bar?
I like stats. Wait, no, I was supposed to answer the other one. I like the other one.
Because the other one's what we're going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You can get the stats. You can go on ESPN.com, and you can find every stat, you know, that's ever existed. There's a stats and info Twitter.
Yeah.
You know what you know what's happened in the game.
There is a literal stat for everything, so if you want to get your stats, go pretty much anywhere else, because you're not going to get stats here. You're just going to get sometimes well-informed opinions expressed very loudly and sometimes very well thought out.
Indeed. You know what happened in the game. I don't need to tell you what happened in Tennessee, Georgia, or
Denver.
Ohio State, Northwestern, Denver,
Cowboys,
Dallas.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You already know what happened.
You know what happened.
We're
we want to talk about
news.
What it means. So this is the you know the result. What's the impact? That's what the Sports Revolution aims to bring to you. We also aim to have some fun, so we like to talk about stuff that is sports, but not really sports, because it's outside lines, if you will. Please don't sue me, Bob Lee. Please don't sue me.
Better yet, please don't sue us, Mickey Mouse. Please don't sue us.
So, I think where we should start of those stories that we have written down on the sheet, and since we are based out of Knoxville, Tennessee, let's start with
Vols.
The pride of the Southland marching band.
And today we should say the pride has an asterisk next to it because apparently, much like everything at Tennessee, tradition is under fire once again.
Yes, it's
allegedly.
Well, I don't think Tennessee's making any secret that attendance has been down for the volunteer football team.
But I'm pretty sure you can say that across the board nationwide at pretty much any sporting event. I mean, in the wake of 70-inch televisions and surround sounds and $8.75 16-ounce beers, I'm looking at you, Nashville Predators, people are staying home just because they can get an experience about at, or maybe even in some fan situation, better than what they can get if they actually go to the damn game.
Yeah, but it's especially at Tennessee, you notice it when you have a 100,000-seat stadium.
Yeah.
And 70,000 people come to a football game, you notice that. And, yeah, my favorite thing to do on a Sunday afternoon is come to the Palacious Butt Munch Studios. We fire up our TVs. We fire up Sunday Ticket and Red Zone. And we just veg out on football and beer and pizza. You can't fault entities, though, like the University of Tennessee or the NFL or NASCAR or any sports league for trying to do things to improve the fan experience, because simply playing the game is not good enough anymore.
Absolutely.
Even if you're a winning team.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that, they're trying to make a more, I don't know if youthful or, I don't want to say party atmosphere, but they want to make a fun atmosphere at the UT games. So they have former Vols like Sterling Hinton's done it. Aaron Foster did it for the spring game. They come DJ, and they play music in the pregame. They want to bring some of that into the game experience. They don't. And make it clear, we both support the pride. We want the pride at the game. That's unique to college football, the bands.
Quick question about the old players coming back to DJ. I didn't get a chance to hear Arian Foster throw down on some turntables. Did he play anything that was exclusively written in Paradactyl?
Not that I know of. I wasn't at the spring game, so I can't comment. I was working. Imagine that.
All right. Well, if you were out there and you heard Arian Foster drop some fat Paradactyl beats, be sure and let us know at some Twitter handle. I'm sure we'll register after the fact.
Tweet us at The Will Rab or at Landoz, LANDOZ.
Hey, that's me. Anyway, so
I don't think we're going to bother to make a Sports Revolution Twitter. I think we're just going to use our own.
Yeah, the revolution will not be Twittered either.
No. But here's the again, folks. not love college football, love the atmosphere, love the pride of the Southland Marching Band. Very talented band, very well respected. Up until 2012, they had marched in like 20 presidential inaugurations.
And I know
immense respect for them.
And I know that the University of Alabama says that they have the million-dollar band or whatever. For my money, there is no band better than the Pride of the Southland Marching Band.
But in a 3.5 or 4 hour game experience, there is no reason that the Pride has to play exclusively or not at all. And that's what they're trying. That's what, from this petition, from what it sounds like, is the university wants to make some changes, and the Pride is looking at it from an all-or-nothing approach.
It really seems like the Pride is letting their pride get the best of them.
Indeed. It seems like, I can't do it my way, so we're going to take the ball, our ball, and go home, and we're going to make the university look like a bunch of assholes.
Kind of like the Democrats/Republicans are doing in Washington.
Republicans/Democrats
in Washington.
Look, here's you can read the petition. It's on change.org.
Change.org, because, you know, that's what President Obama needs to worry about right now.
We got other stuff. I'm not going to read through it, but they're making it sound like the university wants to get rid of the marching band altogether, and it's a money thing. And I'm just going to go ahead and say we're already not safe for work, so you know what? That's bullshit. They don't want – it's bullshit. They don't want to take away the pride.
That's some big orange bullshit right there.
They want to improve the game atmosphere because they need people to go to the games because, A, I don't know if you noticed, but Tennessee's kind of in a deficit since we're paying 18 coaches that no longer work for the University of Tennessee.
Thanks, Mike Hamilton.
Chief among them, Derek Dooley and Bruce Pearl. Bruce, we miss you. Please.
Yes, yes. Big ups to the Bruce.
But, two, I don't also know if you noticed Saturday in that game, but it was a huge home field advantage for Tennessee.
Yep.
Because the fans were rowdy and the game was sold out and they were excited. And yeah, Georgia has a lot to do with that, and the fans would have been there anyway. And the Pride has a lot to do with that, with them being rowdy. But it's not all. And it's not diminished if I play on fourth down and the rotation instead of it just being the Pride, you know, playing the battle from Gladiator.
Yeah.
Well, there's no reason we can't mix in, you know, 20 seconds of Hell's Bells from AC/DC or We Will Rock You from Queen.
That'd be awesome. 102,000 of my closest friends stomping along to We Will Rock You as Tennessee lines up on a crucial third and inches.
And we can reach a compromise. The Pride could learn a couple new songs.
Shocking, music the nerds, learn a new song.
Could learn a couple new songs, could update their stuff, could every year at the end of this year, the beginning of the year, they should sit down and look and say, okay, let's add a couple songs. What songs do we need to keep because they're just a tradition? And then the Pride could work with the athletic department to put together the music list.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily have a set rotation, but rotate and have it be 50-50. There's no reason that it has to be all or nothing. And one of the other things they're saying is that they only want them to play Rocky Top and not play down the field. Well, that's just silly.
That's dumb.
There's no reason you can't play both, because when the ball score a touchdown, they play down the field.
Yeah.
And
then they play Rocky
and
Top.
And then after they kick the extra point, they play Rocky Top. I don't think, I really don't think Butch Jones, Dave Hart,
They're not coming to take away down the field.
I don't think they give a shit what the band plays as long as it's appropriate music. I don't think they give a shit what they play over the PA as long as it's appropriate.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's not some valid concerns, but I'm just saying when we both agree that we think this petition's a little bit over the top.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, it really feels like the Pride is letting their pride get out of control. It really feels like, You put it best. This is either give me my way or we're going to take our ball and go home. Really? You're the pride of the Southland band. They're not going to eliminate you. They're not taking away Rocky Top. They're not taking away Down the Field. You have to compromise. You have to change. It's part of life. I know change is scary. I understand that. But at the same time, you're not going anywhere. You're going to be a part of the University of Tennessee as long as there is a University of Tennessee, unless something just horribly, horribly goes wrong.
If it was about money, they would just cut the band.
Exactly, yeah.
And we would be on here being outraged that the university can't find some money for the fucking band.
Yeah.
But it's not that. They're just trying to adjust. They're trying to improve the fan experience. They want to make it fun for students to go to the game. The students love the Pride.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. I don't think the students would want to. Most students would say, yeah, we like having the band there. But they'd also probably tell you that they need to play some new songs.
Mm-hmm.
Newsflash. Journey wrote Separate Ways probably 30 plus years ago. It's a great song. I love me some Journey. But I don't need to hear the same six songs. There's 7 or 8 home football games every year. And there are 30 some odd basketball games at home between the men and the women.
Yeah.
So that's 40 sporting events. I don't need to hear the same 5 songs literally 20 times a game times 40. That's 1,000 something times. I don't need to hear Journey Separate Ways 1,000 times, okay? I love you, but we can have a compromise. We can play both. They play music on the PA at the baseball games at Lindsey Nelson Stadium,
mm-hmm.
and the world doesn't come to an end. We have to stop this idea here in Tennessee that we have to stop being afraid of change.
Well,
and it's not just with Tennessee, but that's a completely different podcast. We can embrace tradition while staying modern and staying hip.
I like
do both.
I like tradition up to a point. When tradition becomes an obstacle for your program, because it really feels like, yeah, we want to hang on to our tradition. The University of Tennessee is a program that is rich with tradition, but at the same time, if you keep doing the same song and dance for 100 years, everybody's going to get tired of the same song and dance. Keep aspects of it, but, I mean, add some flair to it. At one point, I mean, when you watched football, now when you watch a football game, there's, like, graphics, there's a line of scrimmage graphic. There's a first down graphic. It gives you a graphic of what down it is and how many yards there are. Go back 20 years ago, you would be lucky if you had a clock on the screen. And I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, well, they're messing up football the way we watch it. The way I watched it was good. Yeah, it might have worked for you, but at the same time, it's like just because it worked for you doesn't necessarily make it a better situation. And that's what I kind of look at this
yeah,
like.
Yeah, and we're going to move on from this. We have a couple other things we want to hit on, and we're just going to have this first segment go a little bit long. But that's okay because it's a podcast. There's not really actually a time limit on it. I'll just say one more thing and just agree with you, and we'll just say, and I hate to speak for you, but I think we both agree on this. Tradition is great, but it doesn't mean it can't be updated.
Exactly.
Build a new, not don't get rid of all the other stuff, but kind of build a new tradition. It's kind of a new beginning at Tennessee. They're rising from the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Work out a good compromise.
Rise to the top, I hear they
yeah.
say.
You know, work out a compromise. Have the band play and play some songs.
You can have it both ways. You can have your cake and eat it too.
And the band can play a song one play, and then they can play, you know, Hell's Bells the next, or appropriate for the situation. Just kind of, but it doesn't have to be divisive. It's not. It doesn't have to be us versus them. We're all one big family. We're all one big team. Work together to make the best experience for everybody and make a hostile atmosphere that helps your football team win. So speaking of that and speaking of fans and passion and pride, that leads us into Matt Schaub.
Oh, boy.
Of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, talk about passionate.
I really almost wanted to strangle Sunday night. Because I went into my fantasy matchup down 11 points, or down 10. I was down 115 to 125.
Yeah.
the Bluff Company on the 90 point through the Rock League. Macho Man League, didn't do so good this week. I had a shot, didn't work out. You know, still 3-2, happy with that. But I was a perfect 4-0 going into this week in my other league. So I wanted to, you know, obviously go 5-0. I'm playing one of the lower teams in the league. Tony Romo got me within 10 points of a tie. So 11 points from Aaron Foster. He's playing Sunday Night Football. I'm going to win. And I was just thinking, damn it, Matt Schaub. You are going to throw so many interceptions, Aaron Foster's never going to get a handoff because you're never going to have the ball.
He's going to throw so many interceptions, Tony Romo's going to be like, damn, that guy throws a lot of interceptions.
Yeah, well, it worked out. Aaron got his 11 points. I won my fantasy matchup. I didn't have to go yell at Matt Schaub. Apparently, some guy in Houston thought he needed to.
Yeah.
And there are conflicting reports on this from SB Nation. They've published some tweets from the Houston police to say, contrary to some reports, it was not a group of angry fans outside the Schaub residence.
Which is good news. Bad news is...
A family member reported seeing a suspicious male in the driveway of the residence taking pictures.
That's the bad news.
The vice president of security, Jeff Miller, meanwhile confirmed to CBS's Ian Rappaport that fans, in fact, shouted insults from the street. So, maybe there wasn't a group, but... There's conflicting reports, but it appears that some people, gave Matt Schaub his comeuppance.
Or what they think is his comeuppance.
Yeah. Jesus, people. I mean, the week before that, we had a guy go to the Texans Pro Shop during a game and buy a $200 Nike authentic Texans Matt Schaub jersey to promptly set it on fire.
That's dedication. The fact that you hate a man so much, you're going to go spend $200 to prove a point of how much you hate him.
And you look at the NFL standings, and you look at the AFC South.
Texans are still in it.
And the Texans are 2-3, and they've had some disappointing losses. But here's the thing you have to remember. The Titans have lost their quarterback for an indeterminate amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5 weeks into the season.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Number two. Yeah, you don't want to lose ground to the Colts, who are 4-1 right now and look really good. Yeah, Matt Schaub sucks. But at the end of the day, it's a game. Go ahead.
I'm going to ask something, and I'm in no way advocating what this jackass did, or I'm not even advocating what the idiot who dropped $200 to burn a jersey did. It's like, that's your own money. You can do whatever you want, man. I kind of understand the Houston fans' frustration with Matt Schaub. Yeah, they are 2-3, but in those two victories, it was a comeback victory week one at San Diego, and then it was week two, a comeback victory at home to the Titans. So the two victories they've had to come from behind in the fourth quarter, and Matt Schaub hasn't looked good in a single game
all year. They really should be 1-4.
Yeah, they should be 1-4, maybe even 0-5 if San Diego doesn't get caught at the end of it.
I understand their frustration, but you don't need to go to the guy's house and yell at him.
Like I said, I am not advocating at all what this jackass did, and he needs to be thrown in jail. If he did go to Matt Schaub's house, started taking pictures and yelling at his family, you never cross the line and involve a man's family.
If you're mad at the team, A, you could not go to the game,
exactly.
You could not watch the game, or you can go with a sign that says, hey, Matt Schaub, you suck.
Or Bent Schaub, yeah. Something like that. You never even think about looking up where this person lives and going to his residence where his family is, his wife and kids.
And who are the Houston Texans fans to expect that they're supposed to be like 5-0 right now and like the Super Bowl favorite? They're the fucking Texans.
Yeah, they're just aggravated Oiler fans. Or excuse me, ex-Oiler fans. I do understand the frustration. The Texans had some Super Bowl aspirations coming into the year, though I think people realistically were like, yeah, they're going to be an also-ran, but I mean, they could be in the conversation. But at the same time, it's like, it's a game at the end of the day.
Well,
you're watching grown men play a child's game.
I think we both expected I think we neither one of us expected the Titans
yeah,
or the Colts to get off to this hot start that they've gotten off to. We expected them to be more average, so Houston was kind of the default AFC South team. Mm-hmm. Been to the playoffs the last couple years. They have Aaron Foster.
Really good defense, we
thought. Really good defense, allegedly. Matt Schaub's decent. He's a game manager
type
guy.
He's not a terrible quarterback.
He's not terrible. So they've underperformed, but
it's
not like they're it's not like they have this great history of
they're not the Pittsburgh Steelers.
They're 10 years old.
Yeah, calm down, Texan
fans.
Calm
down, man.
Yeah,
calm down.
Yeah, you should just be happy Matt Schaub isn't David Carr. Who, speaking of David Carr and the aforementioned Tennessee Titans, 2 weeks ago there was reports that they were trying out quarterbacks and David Carr's name came up. And then this week the Titans were rumored to be trying out Jamarcus Russell. So Jake Locker, please hurry back soon as a Titans fan.
All right, I'm going to call an audible as the QB of the show. We had another couple things.
Wait, if you're the QB, what does that make me? Could I be like the tight end since I do have a tight end?
Play whatever position you want. I'm clearly leading the show, so somebody has to be the quarterback.
All right,
you could be the running back.
I'll be the starting pitcher.
That works too. Whatever. We're called Quick Audible. We had another couple kind of non-on-the-field sports stories we wanted to talk about, but we do need to hit a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk college football, including I'll share my thoughts on Jadeveon Clowney. Later in the show, we'll talk NFL, and we'll tell you about a bar in New York that is no longer showing the Giants game. Keep it tuned right here. It is the Sports Revolution on the Butt Munch Chips Radio Network. Welcome back in. It is the Sports Revolution on the Butt Munch Chips Radio Network. Butt Munch Chips.
Sit on your butt and munch.
Coming straight from Seymour Butts himself, so.
Yes, we might be having to have a new slogan campaign, Seymour says.
Indeed, that's what we were talking about during the break. So if you have any ideas, you can tweet us. I am at TheWillRab. He is at Landoz, LANDOZ.
That is still me.
Although I understand for Treehouse of Horror, are you still Land Dad Dome?
Yes, as of this recording, in honor of the Treehouse of Horrors, and of course, you know what they are, but they're the Simpson Halloween episodes. I am changing my name for the month of October to a Treehouse of Horror-esque name. You know how every year the writers...
In the credits,
Matt Groening, or he's now Matt Growling or something, so I'm Land Dad Dome. I'll probably be something different by the time this is up. But, yeah, join in on the fun, and let me know. Twitter.com/Landoz, L-A-N-D-O-Z.
We're going to talk some college football this segment, and we didn't get a chance to get to it in the first part of the show. So we'll start off with a couple of off-the-field things. And one is it's leaked out who the committee members for the college football playoff are going to be. And the first problem is that the majority of them are going to be athletic directors. And that's not a conflict of interest at all.
No kidding. That's not only a conflict of interest. I think that's the actual example of a conflict of interest.
Well, if we're going to have the athletic directors just pick who they want to play in the national championship, why don't we just cut out the middleman in Washington and have the lobbyists be the congressman? The other problem is that apparently there's still a lot of backwards dipshits.
I'm stunned to find this
with
out.
Opinions on what Condoleezza Rice should be doing now that she's no longer the third most powerful
Condoleezza
person.
Condoleezza Rice shouldn't be picking football.
Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you watch Chappelle's show, you know what we're talking about there. Apparently, David Pollack and Pat Dye don't feel that she's qualified. Although Pollack backtracked But I think that was after Sam Ponder put her stiletto up his ass.
Yeah, after Minnie Mouse got in his ear and said, "Oh, you listen here, goddammit."
Only Walt Disney's allowed to be racist. Only Walt Disney and Vince McMahon are allowed to be blatantly racist.
Allegedly.
Allegedly cloned. Oh, wait, we can't do that now because we're a sports show. We can't talk about clones.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
First episode, ABC, Disney's going to sue us. Now Jim Rome's going to sue us. WWE's going to sue us.
Well, Jim Rome's probably not going to be able to sue us because he's over on CBS Sports Radio and they don't have any money.
Boom, shots fired from Boom. A broke-ass podcasting network.
But this is stupid. I think Clay Travis put it really, really well. It, quote, this is at Clay Travis BGID, which I still am not exactly sure if I understand what BGID stands for.
I used to know this at some point.
So, it's something about a beard.
Beards get it done.
Beards get it done.
And as a bearded brethren, I have to agree with him.
Anyway, so this is Clay Travis and his beard and him out kicking coverage, which is just great. If we trust a random jury of 12 to decide life and death, isn't a hand-selected football committee pretty simple?
Yeah, I mean, that right there is just boom. Thank you, good night, folks, yeah.
I think John Adams put this well. We talked to him today on the sports page. He's in favor of having writers do it. But I agree with his general premise. As long as the person has the time to watch a lot of college football and be educated, they qualify. So I think Archie Manning is a great selection. Mm-hmm. Hey, I don't have a problem with Condoleezza Rice. I don't know exactly why they... What led them to her in the first place, other than she said she was interested in doing it? But as long as you're gonna, as long as you are willing to sit down and spend your time watching college football, and includes DVRing and going back during the week and watching games you may not have seen live,
and not just your conference's games as well.
Yeah, as long as you watch the important football games each week, me and Landaws could be on the committee. Landaws and I could tell you the four best teams in college football. It's not that hard.
It really
and
isn't.
And somebody's feelings are going to be the number five teams are going to feel bad.
Yep.
But along the way somewhere, they probably did something
to be the number five team.
To be the
number
five team. It's just like number 69 in March Madness feels like shit.
Yeah, ask the Tennessee Volunteers the last 2 years what it feels like to be the 69th and
70th. But along the
team.
Way, if they would have won a game here
exactly.
or a game there,
they wouldn't have been the 69th team.
They would have been the 69th team.
Yeah, they would have been in
and
the
it
field.
Doesn't matter if it's four teams or 104 teams.
It could be 8, it could be 16, 32. There's always going to be a team that feels like they got screwed or they got jobbed. And I will say this on your point, it's like, that writers should maybe be on the selection committee. I actually think that's a really good idea because in the professional sports, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, who votes on the Hall of Fame, which is pretty much the biggest
the
honor
media.
One can get in that sport? Exactly, the media. So if the media is trusted enough to pretty much be the historians and the gatekeepers but to separate between the great players and the greatest of all time, why not a college... A four-team college football playoff. And I will say this, it's like you were asking about Condoleezza Rice and her connection to football. It's like this might have been only a few sites reporting this, but you remember when right before Roger Goodell was named the commissioner of the NFL, there were actual rumors that Condoleezza Rice was going to be the next commissioner of the NFL.
I know she's an avid football fan, and she's a professor at Stanford mm-hmm. right now. And
She's a brilliant woman.
The thing is, there are plenty of qualified people. It doesn't matter that Condoleezza Rice hasn't played football. I never played college football. I could tell you who the top four teams are. We're going to do that here in this segment.
Peter Gammons never played Major League Baseball, but I would take his opinion over a lot of people.
Okay, so they have the Harris poll right now, and that's just a blend of different people.
Yep.
I almost think, rather than, and they're not going to do this, but, and this will be my final thought on this. If you really want to have a good system, and again, I'm saying this for John Adams, why not put together a panel?
A committee, like a selection committee.
They have the selection committee, but why not? I'd almost rather them put out a BC, and you're not going to call it the BCS ranking.
Yeah, careful, careful. We don't want to say those letters.
I don't think the BCS formula was bad as much as the idea that we're just going to pick two teams, and there are we don't really have a playoff right now. We kind of have a pseudo playoff. Mm-hmm. We have four teams. We're baby steps. Trust me, it's going to expand.
Oh yeah,
but I'm not really sure why you need a selection committee to pick four teams. And I understand that they're also going to put the teams into the major New Year's Day bowl games and all that stuff. If you want it unbiased, you need to put together a BCS-style ranking, because if you put enough people into it, they'll cancel each other's biases out.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you have some athletic directors that vote, that's fine. A couple conference commissioners, that's fine, because that represents that section. That represents their interests. Former football coaches, that's great. Former football players like Archie Manning, that's great. People who know football. Writers. And then computers. And each is weighted where they're, and they all put in a ranking, and it all weights out 25%, so it cancels out everybody's bias, because at the end of the day, it's all equal, and you go by those rankings.
That would be a good system. And
you should really just use the AP Top 25, but they're so disgusted with college football that they told the BCS to pound sand.
Yep.
And thus they created the Harris Poll, which was like I said, former players, media, coaches. It's a combination of all that. That would fix all of this, but the overarching point, Pat Dye, David Pollock. Women can do things other than cook and raise children. And at the end of the day, again, it's a fucking college football game.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just young adults playing a kids game.
We're not voting on the debt ceiling or the government shutdown.
Though to be fair, I don't think many people are voting on the debt ceiling or the government shutdown right now. Boom, take that.
Well,
Washington.
Yeah, I would pick Washington. Those actually be the last people up. They would mess up picking the college football playoff. But my point is,
unfortunately,
it's not life and death.
They're going to be picking on something a lot more important.
And then the other thing, real quick, Jadeveon Clowney.
It's so awesome. That dude is just trolling everybody right now and is loving every second of it. And I love every second of it, too. It's just so awesome.
It's just pathetic, in my opinion. And I know he has to look out for his other interests, because he's going to make a lot of money. Straight cash.
He's going to make all the money.
But... he needs to go out there and play. Or he needs to attempt to. And if he doesn't think he should play, he should have told Coach Spurrier Saturday morning. He had a muscle strain. And I know, again, he's not in the NFL yet. He hasn't made his money yet. But we are told it was a rib injury. Michael Vick's played quarterback with broken fucking ribs.
Yeah, but Michael Vick also got paychecks for those broken fucking ribs.
I know, but I'm just saying, people have played with absurd injuries. And I know you have to be careful, we're not talking about a concussion. We're not talking about Jason Witten staying in the Florida game at 0-1 with a concussion. Give it a shot. Try to go. Your team needs you. Try to go, and if you can't, that's fine, but at least you tried. That's my only thing.
I don't fault him for not playing. If he feels that his body is less than 100% and he feels like he's at greater risk for being injured, I don't blame him at all. Ask his former teammate LaMarcus Lattimore about that. LaMarcus Lattimore busted his ass to get back out there on the field after suffering a horrific knee injury that would have probably ended most players' careers, only to have another horrific knee injury. And LaMarcus, he has talent to have gone in the top 10 in the draft. He went in, the fifth round because his knees just got jacked up in college. He has the talent to make millions of dollars in his first contract, just putting his name to paper. But because of injuries in the college game that he suffered, he's not going to be, or I mean, he still has that chance to, but he is now behind an eight ball. I mean, he's behind several eight balls now. So I don't fault Jadeveon Clowney for not feeling out there because
if,
he might get hurt.
If you're worried about getting injured, you should just be like, I'm not going to play football this season. I'm not going to play, and I'm going to wait, and in April, I'm going to go to the combine, and I'm going to enter the draft, and I'm going to sit out the season. But if you decide you're going to play, you need to try to play.
Well, at the same time, I know a lot of people were like, well, maybe he should just sit down the season and get ready for the draft in April. If he did that, everybody would be raking him over the he was in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If he does sit out the entire year, he's going to be blasted for being lazy. He's going to be selfish. He only cares about himself. But if he does come out and play and he does get hurt and he does have rib injuries and a strained muscle and he doesn't decide to play, here we are in the same situation saying, you need to play. You owe your team.
You can. My point is you can play through a muscle strain.
Well, and who's to say he didn't try to?
Well, he didn't play at all against in the South Carolina game.
I'm talking about in the week of practice up to. What's not to say he wasn't trying to work through that injury?
Because he didn't practice.
Okay, what about the week before? I mean, not to say he hasn't tried to play through this injury? What's not to say he is gone and been like, oh, I can't even go at 80% due to this injury, so I'm not going to put myself out there to where I could get hurt, and I'm not going to put myself out there
but
to where I'm not giving my 100%
to
the team.
The thing is, they can shoot. James Franklin tried to play and couldn't last year, and he had like a separated shoulder, and he refused any medicine whatsoever. If you have a muscle strain, they can shoot you up with something to where you can play and where it won't bother you. Jadeveon Clowney played with a broken foot already. Yeah. That's the point. His performance hasn't been where it needs to be this season. And I think he was overhyped.
Well, yeah.
He's not going to knock the helmet off of the running back like he did in the Michigan game every single play. But he was out of shape in the North Carolina game, and look, I know it's partially the player, but he's going up to Coach Spurrier 30 minutes before the game and being like, Coach, I can't play. That should have been decided. They should have had some idea way before that, is all I'm saying.
Well,
it's just a messy situation.
I agree with you to a point, but at the same time, if anybody should have a problem with the way it was handled, it should have been Spurrier with Jadeveon telling him 30 minutes before a game, hey, coach, I can't go. And Spurrier doesn't have a problem with it. Spurrier said in a press conference, if Jadeveon Clowney never plays another snap at South Carolina again, people should be thankful he came and played.
That's Spurrier sarcasm. Spurrier's pissed off at Jadeveon Clowney.
Well, whether he's pissed off or not, he went out in the media with a handwritten note that he read, like he was giving a speech in public speaking class or something.
Spurrier plays games with the media, and he uses the media to send messages to kids all the time.
Well,
so,
believe me, as somebody who heard you can't spell citrus without UT, I know that Spurrier uses the media, but at the same time, you
have to take everything he says with like a dump truck of salt. A dump truck.
That's
literally
true, but at the same time, I don't take away from this Spurrier as just putting out a statement and saying it and grinning through his teeth. I take that as Spurrier's got his back, regardless.
Well, he does, but I think he knows. Right now, me personally, I wouldn't use a top 10 pick on Jadeveon Clowney. It's not just the injury. It seems to me like he takes plays off. And I know you're not going to if you make one big impact play defensively in a game, see also the punt block in Tennessee, Georgia. That's fine. But he's not doing shit.
He has not had a good year.
No. And he looks lazy and like he takes plays off and he's not in shape. So
I kind of feel like this story might be leading to a bigger problem for Jadeveon Clowney than his performance this year, and that's his work ethic.
That's what I'm saying, is you already got evidence that he's not trying hard, and then in the Kentucky game, he doesn't want to play. So how do you know you don't know how bad he was really hurt, is all.
I'm not going to call a kid a liar saying he's hurt, because we're not in his body, and it's like, yeah, you were talking about he's already played with a broken foot. Well, you know what, 2 weeks ago, somebody for the Arizona Cardinals lost the top of their middle finger, and he continued to play. So just because one person does one thing, doesn't make it the rule for everybody.
No, but I feel like, and I don't want to sound like a meathead, but I feel like a muscle strain is some, especially in your midsection. I don't think you can do, if you got a strained muscle by your ribs, yeah, it might hurt, but I don't think you're going to do any damage. You might have to miss a couple games for it to heal, but it would be healed in time to, you know, go to the combine. And B, you're not going to make it worse. It's not like playing on a knee too soon. It's different.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
I don't really know for sure, but that's the vibe I get. It's not that it's not as big of a deal.
On the severity of the sprain, especially if it's right along the rib and the rib cage, if it's really bad, it could have hurt him to breathe. I mean, I've strained muscles. I mean, I've strained my back muscle, and it's like, certain muscles, when you strain them, just shut it down. You're not doing anything. So just because it's a muscle strain and it quote-unquote doesn't sound bad, we don't know what muscle it is. So, I mean, give the dude the benefit of the doubt. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, it just seems like it's just another thing from this guy, and it just...
Though I do really, I did really like his impromptu press conference that he decided to give Tuesday afternoon to the media, where he was just out there and be like, yeah, whatever, I'm trolling you, it's cool.
All right, let's go through. We got our top five teams. This is the Sports Revolution top five.
You remember how earlier we were saying it's not that hard to pick the top or the four best teams in college sports, college football? We're going to prove it to you right here. So
I'll let you go first.
All right.
Since I'm the host, you're the co-host, I'll let you go first.
Okay, my number one team in America, it's the Alabama Crimson Tide. That really shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. I'm of the mindset Alabama is going to be number one until proven otherwise. Now, I will say my number two team, the Oregon Ducks, they're starting to creep up on Alabama. I'm really hoping that both teams go undefeated throughout the season so we could see Alabama and Oregon in the BCS championship. And I might actually pick Oregon to beat Alabama this year. It's kind of a... I don't know. I want to say it's an upset, quote unquote. But I mean, around these parts, if a non-BCS team won the BCS, that would be considered
non-SEC.
What did I say?
BCS.
Whatever.
Anyway,
my number two team, like I said, is the Oregon Ducks. Number three, I kind of went back and forth on it. I'm going to say Clemson because, I mean, just based on who's played who so far this year, there's no way you could leave Clemson outside the top five, and they've beaten everybody that they had put in front of them, and they've beaten some pretty damn impressive people so far for this early in the season. Number four, I have the Stanford Cardinals, or as I like to call them, the Stanford Trees, because their mascot is a big, giant pine tree. The number five team in college football, the Jacksonville Jaguars, because they're not a professional team, so, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a great point, is just how bad the Jaguars are. Just to point out, look, folks, yeah, I know the Jaguars are bad. No, Alabama wouldn't beat them.
No.
And yeah, you talk about Clemson, and yeah, I agree. They're number three right now. Hard to find teams. And yeah, they played South Carolina State. But they played Georgia, and then they played South Carolina State, and then they played three conference games in a row. And yeah, it was NC State, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. But that to go from Georgia, one tune-up game, and then into conference play, I've been impressed with Clemson so far because they haven't just they've handled everybody that they've played everybody at the level that you expect them. They haven't had a letdown yet. So I agree with you, and I'll put them at number three. Alabama, Oregon are obvious, one and two, and you could really put them either way. Alabama started out the season number one, so I'm going to leave them number one. I've been impressed with them. I know people have been panicking. oh, well, their defense isn't as good. And what about the... Dude, they win football games, period. Let's look real quick at this, if I can find it real quick. You look at... here, screw it. We'll just go to the... Here we go. Look at Alabama's schedule. They beat Virginia Tech by 25 points. They got in a shootout with Texas A&M, but Texas A&M jumped out early, and Alabama was able to come back, and that was a great football game. Yeah, Colorado State, you know, Nick Saban's never going to think it's a perfect game. They still won by 25 points. They shut out Ole Miss, and then they, of course, they should have put 45 on Georgia State, but they didn't allow them. They haven't allowed a touchdown in the last two games. And then they're going to Kentucky this week, and that should just be another dismantling. Yeah. But they're just impressive. And it's not always pretty. Like, Virginia Tech wasn't pretty as a lot of non-offensive touchdowns. They find ways to win. And at the end of the day, they have Nick Saban.
Yeah, there's that. So as long as...
Very impressed with Alabama. Very impressed with Oregon, because it's a lot like Alabama. They just go handle their business, and it doesn't matter who they play. I mean, Oregon averages 59.2 points a game. And you have a nickel state thrown in there. Yeah, they put up a... But other than that, they've played Virginia, Tennessee, California, Colorado. Maybe not the best teams in the country,
but cupcakes.
BCS conference teams.
Exactly. You're not conference playing the games. Texas school of the deaf and blind.
No. A good test for them this Saturday. Mm-hmm. At Washington, be interesting to see if Justin Wilcox can keep that defense going.
Now, why would that name sound familiar for Tennessee fans around?
Yeah, here's the thing. Oregon likes to play defense, too. That's why they're my number two. They only give up 11.8 points per game. They might give up yards, but they don't give up points.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they only allow 11.8 points per game. Washington, their opponent this week, and while I think this could be a decent game, they only give up 14.8. Now, again, not the greatest schedule for Washington, but they did beat Arizona, and they almost beat Stanford last week.
That was a good game. Yeah,
fantastic game. If Justin Wilcox can get Oregon off, if they could, kind of like in the Tennessee game, Oregon got off to a slow start, then they realized, oh, shit, we're actually playing football. Wait.
Is that what we're doing?
Wait, is that what we're doing?
I just thought we dressed up like this because
we're
assholes.
Coming to hang out. If Washington gets off to a good start, maybe forces Oregon into a couple, you know, holds them to a field goal or forces a couple punts, maybe gets a turnover, gets in the groove, and it ends up being a lower scoring game, then obviously Washington has a chance. Mm-hmm. What I'm interested in is what can Washington's... If it gets into a shootout, it's obviously Oregon. But let's say it gets in that 30-point range type game. Is Washington's offense effective enough to win then? If it's a mid-level game, if it's a lower scoring game, it's obviously anybody's game, but I don't think it's going to be a low scoring game because it's Pac-12 football. if it's in the 20s and the 30s, can Washington keep pace? Obviously, Oregon could go out and blow them out 59-20.
Yeah,
but I think the big question on that game is can Washington keep pace? That's an interesting game for me. That's probably one of the best games we got going this week.
In all honesty, I mean, it's LSU, Florida, and then it's this game, in my opinion.
Yeah, so let's look at the rest of my top five. Number four, I have Stanford. Been very impressed with them. And the main thing is I'm just not impressed with Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, clearly neither one of us are. You have the Jacksonville Jaguars. I have Stanford.
The Ohio State Buckeyes at this point in the season are a product of their schedule. They played nobody with the exception of Northwestern, and they escaped from Northwestern.
Yes.
And there's a very real possibility they'll go undefeated until they play Michigan at the end of the year.
They'd probably go undefeated.
Just because they play nobody.
Yeah. And then my number five team is Florida State. Very impressed mm-hmm. with them.
They're a fun team.
Jameis Winston. They are a fun team to watch. And on top of that, they've taken care of their business. And if you take Ohio State out of the top five because you're not impressed with them and you just bump up the next two teams, that's how I came to the conclusion. But check this out. So, not the greatest schedule they've played yet. They dropped 63 on a ranked team. Shut out Maryland.
And I don't care what ranked team that is. That's impressive if you can drop that amount on a ranked team.
And they've already handled adversity. They've shown that they can handle adversity. They got down to Boston College, mm-hmm. and a decent but an inferior opponent, and they battled back. And especially if they can beat Clemson next week, because they have a bye this week.
You can't lose on a bye, I hear.
That puts them in the driver's seat for the ACC.
And the ACC will get a BCS spot. And,
yes. And the thing that helps Florida State is they have Miami on November the 2nd. They have Florida on November 30th. Those are tough games, but that does boost their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So if they could run the table and you have wins over Maryland, who is ranked, and they're not ranked now, but I could see them
getting back in
by the end of the – Clemson's going to be ranked all year.
Oh, yeah.
Miami, Florida. That's just as good as anybody else's schedule outside of the Southeastern Conference.
That's impressive if they do go undefeated. But that's the thing with that schedule. I think they have to go undefeated for them to even be in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Team outside of your top five, who's a contender?
I pulled a few strings and I was actually able to get this team's playbook. For today's recording, I'm going to go with the Baylor Bears as I hold up their offensive playbook. And for those of you who can't see it, I'm holding up an Xbox 360 controller because that's what the Baylor Bears are. They are literally NCAA 14 on the field. They're going to drop 70 points on you. They're going to put up 1,000 yards of offense, and that's just what they do. They are NCAA 14 come to life.
I love that pick. I'm going to go LSU at number 10, and the reason is LSU still controls their destiny in the West.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that destiny does involve having to beat Alabama, but, you know, you still do control it.
If they go in and beat the number one team and they get into the SEC championship, if they don't lose any other games going before or after Alabama, they knock off Alabama, they both finish the season 11-1, they're tied. Obviously, LSU has the tiebreaker because it's head-to-head. Mm-hmm. So
I do know how tiebreakers.
Just saying. They're in a perfect spot. They control their destiny. Now, it's tough. You got to go beat Alabama, very good football team, but LSU's proven they've been able to do that.
Yeah,
I think this year, especially if that offense keeps clicking like it is, they have a real shot. So LSU, my contender this week. Real quick before we wrap up, because I know we're going a little bit long on this second segment, but it's kind of my podcast, so that's what we're going to do.
Well, we're just going to go long on all the segments.
We're just going to go long.
Apologize at the end of the segment for going long.
Yeah.
All right.
upset pick this weekend.
Upset pick.
I'm going Missouri and Georgia.
I could see. Well,
it's as simple as Missouri's healthy. They're playing well. Remind you of the 11 campaign with James Franklin at quarterback. And UGA is coming off another tough game, two in a row now. Injuries, I mean, I could read the phone book quicker than I could read the Georgia injury report.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know if anybody knew this or not.
Now, if Georgia goes in there and win, would not be surprised, but I think they need to be on upset alert. There's the potential for them to derail their season right here if they're not careful.
I could see that. I actually don't have an upset pick, but I'm just going to talk on your game there. I could see that happening, but I just don't see it happening because, like you said, 2 weeks in a row, two very tough tests for Georgia. I don't see them making it three in a row, and I do realize, they are hurt. For those of you who didn't watch the Tennessee-Georgia game, there towards the end, the Red Cross has set up triages on the Georgia sideline due to so many injuries, but it's like, yeah, I get it. They're hurt. They've had a tough go of it, and that's part of the reason why I don't see them losing to Mizzou this week, just because I think Mark Richt, in between of losing control of Georgia like he seems to do every year according to Georgia fans, in between losing control of the Georgia program, he's going to be like, look, guys, we're still in the driver's seat in the East, and last year we almost beat the team that won the national championship, so let's fucking get back.
Yeah, but they don't. I don't know. I feel, especially with the injuries mounting, I feel a loss coming from Georgia here in the next few weeks.
I wouldn't be surprised. Next few weeks, just based on attrition with how many people they've lost, I have to agree with you. A loss is probably coming. I just don't see it happening with Mizzou this week.
It's either Mizzou or Florida. It has to be one of those two. So
yeah, I'm picking them to lose the largest cocktail party.
All right, we're going to hit another break, come back. We'll talk some NFL here on the Sports Revolution. Welcome back. A final segment to the Sports Revolution here on the Butt Munch Chips Radio Network. The Will Rabb and A. Landon Doan hanging out with you. And before we leave you today, we are going to talk some NFL football. And Landon, let's start with a fantastic story out of New York. Rick's Cabaret.
That sounds like a fun place.
Yes. I believe, if I remember correctly, I want to say that is Howard Stern's favorite establishment.
Well, that speaks volumes of Rick's Cabaret, doesn't it?
Yeah. They are no longer going to air the Giants game.
Why is that? What, did they lose their CBS affiliate or something?
Boo, Indy.
When customers... Here's this is the New York Daily News story. When customers at Rick's Cabaret in Midtown were yelling, "Take it off," this past Sunday, they were actually yelling at the TV screens playing the Giants game.
Boo, Indy.
During the second half, customers were booing the screens.
Boo, Indy, touch the burger, boo.
And dancers had a hard time cheering them up, said club spokesman Lonnie Hanover. And now Giants games have been banned from Rick's. Until the Giants get their acts together, we will not be showing them on TV.
Can I ask a question here? This was the first one that came to my mind. Who the hell goes to a strip club to watch football? If I go to a strip club, I'm pretty sure I'm going to watch something else than a TV.
Well, this is a high-class kind of, like, gentleman's club.
Are we really going to argue semantics over gentlemen's?
Well,
it's a strip club.
They're different. There are different levels. Like, for example, the Pit House Club in Tampa actually has a steakhouse in it.
Okay, neat. I'm still not going to watch TV when I'm there.
Well,
I'm going to be watching the local entertainment get my drift.
I'm just saying there are some of these higher class gentlemen's clubs that are kind of more upscale that try to draw sports fans in for stuff like that.
That doesn't make any damn sense.
No, I'm not going to the strip club to watch football either, because like I said, we fire up the screens here in the Butt Munch studios.
But even if we didn't, even if going to a strip club was the only way for me to watch sports, I would never watch sports then if that were true.
I'm just saying.
I mean, I would still be going to the strip clubs. I just wouldn't see anything on TV. I mean, it's like, I don't understand what you're doing to the point where it's like, you have a naked lady who is doing stuff for, wow, this is getting really unsafe for work. You have a naked lady, like, not a foot away from you, doing stuff to herself for your pleasure, and you're busy watching Eli Manning throw another fucking interception? Really, dude?
I'm just saying there are some of these establishments like Rick's.
Stupid.
The Penthouse Club in Tampa that are higher class that get people to come in for these events and watch sports and watch strippers at
the
same
time. Well, that makes it even worse. I would imagine these higher-end strip clubs are more expensive, so you're paying more to go to a strip club to not look at naked ladies.
What?
I don't know. I feel like you can do both. I mean, like, think about it. If there's a 3-minute TV timeout, you know, you just make sure they play a 3-minute song while you get your I don't know.
Yeah, but why are you even worried that there's a 3-minute timeout? Do you really want to go from Chastain grinding on you to look at a 300-pound lineman bent over?
Well, I don't know. I don't know because I've not been to a strip club, good, bad, or indifferent, so I can't really
wait
comment.
At all. You've never been to a titty bar?
No, I'm not.
We might have to fix that one day.
Yeah,
not on NFL Sunday.
No, and not in Knoxville because I've not heard great things.
Dance, anybody want to dance?
Boo, Wendy.
Boo, Wendy Testerberg.
So. Yeah, if you want to watch the game in New York, the titty bar probably wasn't the top choice anyway.
Yeah, what the
but
hell,
but it's not an option.
I like football as much as the next person. If football is on, there's like a 9 out of 10 chance I'm going to watch it. You know what that 1 out of 10 chance where I'm not going to watch it? When boobs are in my face. That's when I am not watching football.
Yeah, you don't push aside time with your lady for football. But let's talk some actual football. I just thought that was a fun story. That's just
yeah. Let's talk about football instead of strippers. That's for another podcast. AKA
butt,
the best podcast
butt
ever.
Munch After Dark.
Things get a little sexy.
So we're 5 weeks into the NFL season, and things are kind of starting to take shape. You got the Patriots atop of the East at 4-1,
which is I think the softest 4-1 I've ever seen.
Yes. Surprise, surprise! The Dolphins and the Jets are 3-2.
I'm stunned about
though.
The
Jets lucked into a couple of those. One of those is against the Bills, and the Bills aren't all that great though. You give the devil their due; they won the game. And then one of those wins isn't even really a win. Because the Jets didn't beat the Bucks, the Bucks beat the Bucks.
Yeah, that's true. The Bucks beat the Bucks by deciding to start Mark Glennon.
That was in Week One, and that was they had like 850 late. Sloppy ass piece of shit football game.
But what do you expect from a Greg Schiano coached team?
Turds. And of course, like I said, the Bills are 2-3. AFC North, the Steelers are
an
albatross. And then you have a 3-way tie between the Ravens, Browns, and Bengals all at 3-2. And who, what?
The Cleveland Browns.
The Cleveland effing Browns.
What the hell? You trade away your best player, and then, oh, by the way, we're just going to go on a 3-game winning streak. It's cool. No big deal.
Yeah, the only thing more surprising than the Cleveland Browns is fucking Mint Berry fucking Crunch. Saying a lot of dirty words and making a lot of South Park references on the podcast, but then again, if we didn't do that, we wouldn't belong on the internet.
Or Butt Munch.
The AFC South.
Speaking of
a little monster. Surprised to see the Texans in third. I'm not surprised that the Colts are 4-1. You thought they'd come back to earth this year.
I really thought they were going to come back to earth. Just because, I mean, it's like last year they had the magic story with you know, Chuck Strong. And obviously we're all, I don't think anybody on earth, no matter how evil you are, is pro-cancer. And we're very glad that Chuck Pagano seems to be in remission and being healthy. I just thought like there was going to be a step back, a letdown, because you don't have that just high, all right, let's go do it for coach week after week mentality.
Okay.
And they also lost Bruce Arians to Arizona as well, who was extremely vital to their run last year.
Their one loss is to the Dolphins, which right now are a better team than people expected.
Dolphins are
so that's a solid loss. And people say, well, last year they beat up on bad teams. Well, if you get a bunch of bad teams on your schedule, you still got to go out and take care of it and take care of your business. And if you get, you know, I'm most impressed with the Colts because they absolutely decimated the 49ers. And say what you will about their record, the 49ers are a good football team.
Yes.
And then the comeback to get the win this past Saturday over Seattle. And historically, Seattle's not a strong road team, But they had, what, they had a 12-point lead?
Mm-hmm. In the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and the Colts come back and get that win.
Andrew Luck is dangerous in the fourth quarter when the game's on the line. That dude is just deadly.
Well, it's impressive because it's a young team.
Mm-hmm.
But they had that veteran killer instinct to go out there and get that done when young teams don't necessarily always do that. You look at the scoreboard and you're down 12 in the fourth quarter.
Ho-hum, time to pack it up and start preparing for for next week.
Things haven't been going well, and they get that done. So I'm impressed with the Colts. I'm impressed with the Titans. I feel really bad for the Titans that Jake Locker got hurt.
Titans should be undefeated, or they're at the very worst 4-1.
At least, because, I mean, hell, last week they still almost beat Kansas City.
Yeah, and Kansas City
still might have lost to Kansas City last week because they're a decent football team. They would have had a much better shot with Jake Locker than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
It's such a shame what happened to Jake Locker, because he was playing so well. The Titans were playing so well with him as the quarterback. And everybody in Tennessee has been talking, well, this is the make-or-break year for Jake Locker. They finally got out and gotten the weapons for him, so it's all on him now. And dude was getting it done up until he got hurt. And the good news is he didn't have to have surgery, and he is coming back at some point this year. They just don't know when. He's out for an indefinite amount of time, but he is coming back. So
hopefully it won't be too little too late when he comes
back. Exactly. Yeah. Hopefully the Titans can tread water until Jake the Great comes back.
They got off to a fantastic start.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is they've only played one division game.
Yep.
They haven't played the Colts. Haven't played the Jaguars. So they have a tough game this week with Seattle, but they should be able to tread water.
14-point road dog, and yeah. I like Seattle to cover.
Yeah, because the best is in the West, with it the only division with two undefeated teams.
Mm-hmm.
Denver and Kansas City both 5-0. No surprise, but Denver there and Peyton Manning.
You say no surprise, not about Denver being undefeated. I'll say Kansas City being undefeated. That's a huge
shocking surprise. The Broncos weren't a surprise. I was about to say it's a very surprise.
Okay, all right.
That Kansas City is undefeated.
Okay, I was about to say I
didn't expect that at all.
I knew bringing on Andy Reid would improve them from the 2-14 record they had last year. I didn't think they were going to start the season undefeated. And yes, you talked earlier about the Colts beating up on a weak schedule and weak teams. Yeah, but at the same time, all you can do is play the teams they put in front of you. And
it's still quite the accomplishment to be 5-0
undefeated
in the NFL. The NFC is a mess. And I think the teams overall in the NFC are probably better, but they're beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, it's...
We'll go east to west, too. You got the Eagles.
Oh, speaking of mess, we'll start in the east.
The lead in the division...
The NFC least, as I like to call it this year.
The leaders of the division are a tie at 2-3. The Cowboys and the Eagles.
There's a very real possibility the team that wins this division could be 7-9, 6-10 this year.
The Cowboys, though, should be 3-2. But they're not, because Tony Romo is a bitch.
No, you can't put that on Romo. If it wasn't for Romo, they wouldn't have been in that game. If it was any quarterback other than Tony Romo, the Cowboys would have lost by 24 points to the Broncos.
Well, that's true. He did put up 40 fantasy points. But
he threw for 500 and goddamn 6 yards. And one interception.
What I said is what the Cowboys fans are thinking. And at the end of the day, Tony Romo's great for some fantasy numbers. He doesn't get it done in the clutch.
Well, the problem with the Cowboys is Tony Romo has to play perfectly, otherwise the Cowboys just can't win for whatever reason. And it's really not fair to him. I mean, now football is, not about being fair and stuff, but it's like Tony Romo's not a horrible quarterback, but for whatever reason, he has to play perfectly just for the Cowboys to have a shot of winning. Not to win, just to be in it. If he plays less than perfect, DeMarco Murray ain't going to bail you out. That Dallas defense isn't doing anything. I mean, yeah, hi, what's up, Monty Kiffin from Rocky Top? So it's like, I mean, Tony Romo has to get it done. And I feel sorry for the dude. I felt so bad for him on Sunday because in the back of your mind, after Peyton scored that touchdown and the Cowboys got it back with about 2 minutes left, you knew in the back of your mind, it's like, man, I really hope Romo doesn't turn it over here. And then not 15 seconds later, it's like, well, lo and behold.
He always does it, though.
He always does it, but you cannot put what happened this past Sunday on Tony Romo. If you want to put it on anybody, put it on the 11 people who were the supposed Dallas defense.
I guess.
I mean, the Dallas defense, did they stop Denver at all? Yeah, I did see them punt twice.
Early in the game.
Then
Denver scored like five or six times.
Yeah,
in a row,
once Peyton
like
Manning realized, oh shit, we're actually playing.
Kind of like Oregon.
Eagles. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on a Dallas Cowboy rant. I'm not even a Cowboy fan.
Are up and down. I mean, they've won two games with Chip Kelly, but he's learning the NFL's tougher.
Yep.
That it seemed after week one when everybody gushing about
Man,
his offense.
That tone
well, yeah,
changed
you
so
played
quickly.
I'm sorry, we've been talking over each other this whole show. We're just so excited about the new show. Well, yeah, your offense looked great against the shitty Redskins.
Well, and you also have to remember during week one, nobody realized just how bad the Redskins defense was. So people were legitimately excited, which, I mean, I was excited as well, but that's when we also thought Washington had something that resembled defense, and they don't.
And at the same time, too, you didn't really have tape.
Exactly.
On the Eagles.
That's also true.
Chip Kelly's not dumb. They didn't show shit the preseason. Nobody does. The NFC North is interesting.
Mm.
You got the Lions and the Bears on top of the NFC North, and then the Packers struggling to stay afloat at 500. I think you know, the Packers have had a tougher schedule.
Oh, they absolutely have.
And they'll come on and eventually be the top team in this division or challenge for it. But I see a three-horse race. I don't really see the Lions fading. They're not necessarily going to say they're going to win a division, but it's not like they're going to get off to a 3-2 start and then go, you know,
3-6, 3-13 or something.
They're not going to go 6-10 the rest of the way.
I could see the Lions coming back a little bit, but in all honesty, I think that's because the Packers are going to step it up. But at the same time, when I say I see them stepping back a little bit, I still expect the Lions to compete for a wild card position this year. That's what I mean when
I could
step
see
back.
I could see the Lions going like 6-5.
What, the rest of the way?
Yeah, or if they went 5-6, they'd still be 500 on. They're not gonna tank the season.
Oh no. Well, if Calvin Johnson is out much longer, that offense up in Detroit might not be putting that many points on the board like we saw last Sunday.
And the same with the Bears. I can see the Bears at worst going about 500 the rest of the way. They got 11 games to go.
The thing with the Bears is it's not about how they start the season. It's about how they finish the season. Because the last few years, under Lovie Smith anyway, they started out 4-2, 5-1. They started out really well, but then at the end of the year, they just go like lose 4 of their last 5 and miss the playoffs. It's all about how they close.
Wait, I
really like the way Chicago's offense is running under Trestman. I was hesitant because it's like, yeah, dude's coming from the CFL. He has some past experience in the NFL. I was a little leery how he was going to translate. But, dude, his system's working well. Jay Cutler's still Jay Cutler, making questionable passes. But at the same time, I mean, Chicago's defense still has a swarming secondary that'll probably get you at least an interception and maybe a pick six in every other game.
At the worst, see the Bears about a 500 team. And I see the same for the Lions, at worst, about a 500 team. So they do a little bit better than that, than their that 9 or 10 wins and contending for a wild card. So that's going to be a fun division because they're all close.
And then even the team that we're not mentioning, the Minnesota Vikings, they'll still be fun from a storyline standpoint. They have some fun offensive weapons, and then they added Josh Freeman to the quarterback mix. So who's to say in 3 to 4 weeks after he's learned the offense, He can't come in and be like, oh, hey, guess what? I'm Josh Freeman from a few years ago when I threw 25 touchdowns and 6 interceptions.
There's not any reason to suspect the Vikings can't be right around that 500 mark, too.
You still have Adrian Peterson, last I checked.
That's what the NFL's design is, for all the teams to be about 8-8.
Mm-hmm.
The NFC South is an albatross other than the Saints because...
Yeah, it was funny you were saying, yeah.
The Buccaneers haven't won a game, and the Panthers and the Falcons are both, or the Falcons are 1-4, and the Panthers are 1-3, and that gets you second in the division.
Jesus Christ Almighty.
Oh, I guess technically because the Panthers didn't play last week, or whatever, or the Panthers are 1-3 because they've already had a bye, that they're ahead because their percentage or whatever when you do the math.
Okay, so going into week 5, what is Atlanta's record? 1-3?
1-4.
1-4.
Going into a bye on week 6.
Okay, so do you think the Atlanta Falcons make the playoffs this year?
No.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Maybe they can get hot and get a wild card spot, but it's like, with the way the Saints are playing and the way the Falcons have played, can we just go ahead and like call the NFC South in New Orleans' favor?
Once they make their first pass to the division, because they still haven't played the Panthers yet. And I apologize for bumping my mic on my headset. That was not professional or whatever. The Falcons would need to win 9 or 10 games to make the playoffs, because you need to be 9-7 or 10-6
for that wild card.
For that wild, to at least be in contention for it. So to go 9-7, they would need to go 8-3
that's
the rest of the way.
That's tough sledding. I mean, they.
I don't see the Falcons going 8-3.
Neither do I. I think last year was the best year we're going to see out of Matt Ryan in his professional career. I could be proven wrong. And then on top of that, it's like, the running game hasn't been able to get going because Steven Jackson's been hurt. They've had some contributions from Jacquizz Rodgers and Jason Snelling. So, I mean, there's that, but at the same time, it's not, you know, anything amazing. And then on top of that, that prolific passing game has taken a huge hit. Roddy White hadn't been healthy all year, and then news comes out this week, Julio Jones might be lost for the entire season.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I mean, I just can't see Atlanta climbing back in it if they have to go 8-3 to even have a shot.
Well, they have Tampa off the bye, then they go to Arizona.
I'll give them Arizona.
They go to Carolina.
Give them Carolina.
They host Seattle.
That's a loss.
They go to Tampa Bay.
Another win. They're 4-1 coming out of the bye.
Host New Orleans.
That's a loss. 4-2 coming out of the bye.
Travel to Buffalo.
Win 5-2.
At Green Bay.
Boo. At Green. When is that game?
December 8th.
That's a loss. So they're what? 5-3 coming out of the bye now?
Uh-huh. So they're 6-7 in the final three games. They host it. They host Washington.
Probably a win.
They are at Seattle or San Francisco.
Going to. I gotta say that's a loss too.
And then they wrap up the season at hosting Carolina.
That could be a win, but at that point, it might not matter. So I mean, looking at
they could lose either of those games to Carolina. They could lose that game to Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona has a sneaky good defense.
They could lose to Washington. I mean, just because Washington's not playing all that well doesn't mean they don't come up that week and get one of their, you know, 6
And Washington's
wins.
Scoring points just because their defense can't stop anybody.
They lost to the fucking Jets Friday night. None of their games are like Monday night. None of their games are definite.
That is true, yeah. Though, to be fair, the way the Jets have been playing the last little bit, who's to say the Jets aren't a sneaky good team? I'm not saying it for sure. I'm just playing, you know, Nick Saban's ad.
I think my computer just died. Oh, well.
Thankfully, not the computer that we're recording this on, though.
No, just for research purposes there. So we've run through the only division we got is the
NFC West.
NFC West.
Or as I like to call it this year, the NFC Best.
Yeah, you got Seattle, you got San Francisco.
And then those other two teams.
And then it's Arizona and St. Louis.
Yeah.
Clearly the class of that division is Seattle and San Francisco.
The class of that division is the class of the NFC, in my opinion.
I mean, they've already played each other once. I would put New Orleans right up there.
Yeah, I'd put New Orleans in that talk as well. But I mean, at the same time, it's like those. I know they're not playing the best football right now, but San Francisco is still a very good team.
San Francisco's 3-2.
3-2, and they've had a pretty rough slate of it the first 5 weeks.
And then what? Seattle's 4-1.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. And then the Cardinals and the Rams are doing whatever they're doing.
Yeah, the Cardinals and the Rams nobody cares about.
All right, so to wrap up, let's go through our power rankings for the NFL, our NFL top five. And then we'll wrap up the show, so I'll let you start again, Landon.
All right, number one, much like my college top five, should not be a shock to anybody. I'm going with Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. I don't know if you know this or not, but that Peyton Manning kid, he might be okay at football. Number two, I have to go with the New Orleans Saints. Man, having Sean Payton back really helps, doesn't it, Nollins? Number three is kind of a surprise. I'm going to go with the Indianapolis Colts. They've looked very good early in the season with wins at San Francisco and then coming back to beat Seattle at home. Have they played anybody in the division? They've beaten the Jags.
The Jags, yes. That's it.
So they've yet to start the really tough go of it in the division. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Number four is a team that the Colts beat this past week, and I'm going with the Seattle Seahawks. And then number five is another surprise for me, the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, it's like, I will say this, number four Seattle, if they played number two New Orleans in New Orleans, I would say the Saints would beat them. But if New Orleans has to travel to Seattle, I'm going to say Seattle beats New Orleans.
Seattle beats anybody in the playoffs that they have to play at home.
Absolutely. And that's home field is always important in the playoffs, though the Baltimore Ravens have something to say about that last year. But at the same time, it's important to everybody. It is of the utmost importance for Seattle because Seattle is unstoppable. Yeah, and New Orleans. They're unstoppable at home. On the road, they're kind of susceptible. That's my whole spiel. It's like, so even though I have the Saints at two and the Seahawks at four, at the end of the year, I could very easily see it at the Seahawks two and the Saints number four. And then Kansas City, kind of going back to what we talked about on college football, they might be just a product of their schedule at this point. Kansas City is a talented team. I don't know if they're 5-0 talented. But at the same time, like we said earlier, you can only play the teams they put.
You're 5-0 in the NFL.
Exactly. Yeah.
In the NFL.
And you have Eric Berry, so you're doing that well.
I'm going to go Broncos number one just because they're putting up points on everybody.
Yes.
And you got Peyton Manning. They're in a class of their own. Saints are two. I feel like the Saints are the Broncos of the NFC. They have the really good quarterback. They're scoring points on everybody. They're taking care of their business, but just not quite as impressive each and every week as the Denver Broncos. I'm going to go KC number three because they are 5-0 in the NFL, and that's an accomplishment. And then I'm going to go Indy four, Seattle five, based on the fact that Indy just beat Seattle, but they're really 4-4A.
I mean, I can't really fault you on the reasoning of your rankings because we just ranked the same five teams in different orders. I mean, I can't fault
those
you.
Those are the five best teams in the NFL right now or playing the best.
Let's see. If I had to give somebody outside the top five that still might rise up, I'm still not counting out the Bengals yet.
No. Especially because they just beat New England.
Andy Dalton has not played well at all this year. Their defense has given up some surprising stats. I'm still not giving up on them, though I'm not as confident as I was about the Bengals.
All right, so that's going to wrap it up for the first edition of the Sports Revolution here on the Butt Munch Chips Radio Network. A reminder, follow us on Twitter at The Will Rab, at Landaws, and don't forget to check out our sister show, Near Fall Radio.
You can find all of that at buttmunchchips.com. Sit on your butt and munch.
This is how an angel dies. I blame it on my.